had any visitors in so long. And now we'll have two new flame silks. How delightful! She sighed happily. Her scales were so orange she almost looked like a hive wing, but there was no black among them. Instead, flecks of white dotted her spine, and long streaks of white striped her wings. She looked old enough to be Blue's great-grandmother.
I might not be a flame silk, Blue said, checking his wrists again.
Not to worry, she said. I'm sure you'll still be delightful company. Better than all these grousing old dragons, anyhow. Some of them can't keep a secret.
She shot an irritated look at the pale pink flame silk.
And some of them think very highly of themselves.
I can hear you,
Fritillary shouted from his nest.
We all can, called another.
I know, Danaid shouted back. We're in a cave, but I'm having a private conversation, so stick your snouts somewhere else.
I told you. I thought you wanted me to tell Fritillary that you liked his stripes,
the pink silkwing said in a wounded voice.
Aren't you ever going to forgive me?
Well, I don't like them any more, Danaid snapped. I think they make him look skinny and arrogant and potato-brained.
You wish you were as smart as a potato,
Fritillary bellowed.
Go suck a lime, Danaid shouted. I hope your face gets eaten by dung beetles.
Now, settle down, said one of the hive-wing guards in a bored voice.
Anyway, where were we?
Danaid said to Blue, her voice suddenly all sweetness again.
And it wasn't my fault that Festoon overheard me telling Heliconian that you thought he was stealing all the radishes,
the pink dragon went on querulously.
You should be mad at him for eavesdropping, not me.
I was, Danaid snapped. But he died 5 years ago, you halfwit.
Oh, right.
The pink dragon flopped sideways in his nest.
Ignore them, sweetheart, Danaid said to Blue.
Is it always like this?
Blue asked. He waved his hands at the flame silks.
Like what?
Danaid asked cheerfully.
The arguing? He tried.
He'd seen at least three other shouting matches erupt that morning while he'd been searching the cave.
Who's arguing? Danaid said.
Was it old Fritillary? He's the worst. Don't talk to him. Zeneca is terrible too.
Always gossiping and bad-mouthing everyone. You already know you can't trust Pirate over there.
The pink flame silk let out a grumbling sigh and turned his head away from them.
Clubtail is perfectly nice, but by all the hives, he never stops talking. Heliconian ruins everything.
She flipped her tail over the side of the nest and smiled at Blue.
Really? I'm the only one worth knowing.
Danaid, stop poisoning my son's mind,
Admiral said, appearing at Blue's side suddenly.
He's on my side, not yours.
There are sides?
Blue said, confused.
No, Admiral said, but Danaid is definitely on the wrong one. Let me introduce you to the dragons you should be friends with.
Danaid hissed at him.
You can't keep the new friends all to yourself, she cried.
New friends are for sharing. Let him decide for himself who he wants to talk to.
Eat bugs, Danaid,
Admiral said sharply. He led Blue away, his snout in the air.
Isn't she dreadful?
He said, loud enough for the orange silkwing to overhear.
She seemed all right to me, Blue said.
No, Admiral said. She's dreadful.
What is going on?
Blue asked, bewildered.
With what?
Admiral paused to toss Blue a tangerine, smiling.
It's just... You guys seem to spend a lot of time fighting with each other,
Blue pointed out.
Do we?
Admiral looked surprised.
No more than most dragons, I'm sure. Way more than the dragons I know, Blue said.
Admiral flipped one of his wings dismissively.
Well, I suppose we've all been stuck together for so long. There's bound to be a little tension here and there. Come meet Zeneca, though. She's very sweet, and always has clever things to say about the others.
Zeneca shared her kale and kumquats with them, and spent their entire conversation glancing around the cave to make sure everyone else saw that she was officially getting to meet the new Silkwing first. She also made a point of warning Blue away from Danaid and a few other flame silks. This went on with each dragon Blue met, and by the time he wound up back in his nest, he was exhausted. He couldn't keep track of who hated who, except they all seemed to hate Fritillary, which was mutual. The cavern was seething with petty rivalries, long-held grudges, and easily provoked tempers. He flopped down next to Luna's cocoon and rested his head against it. He couldn't wait for his sensible, funny, normal sister to come out. No wonder they're starved for new company. Being trapped in here for so long has turned them all super weird.
Almost my turn again, Admiral said, shaking his wrists out.
He tapped the insides of his arms with his claws, as though hoping it would wake up his silk glands.
Father, Blue said, why do you all fight with each other? Aren't there more important enemies?
Like who? Admiral asked.
The Queen, the Hivewings, the guards who imprison you here, Blue said, lowering his voice.
Oh, tosh, said Admiral. The Queen is our employer. The guards keep us fed and safe and on schedule.
Blue shook his head. How could his father not understand that this was a prison?
Maybe after you've been here for a while, you have to convince yourself you chose this so it all feels less awful.
He'd met two dragons among the flame silks who he suspected weren't as resigned or falsely content as Admiral. Heliconian was restless and fidgety and glanced at the exits a lot. She also asked the only questions about the outside world and what was happening beyond the cavern. And Pyarid seemed desperately unhappy, although he wouldn't say anything bad about the Hivewings. Also Fritillary, with his everlasting bad temper, surely he wanted to escape.
I just think it's silly to be so mad at each other, Blue said, when there are far worse things going on, and dragons who are treating you far more terribly than Danaid. If you all could stop fighting and stand together, maybe you could actually change things.
No, no, Admiral said firmly. I would never work with Danaid or Clubtail or Whitespeck. They are selfish ignoramuses and wrong about everything. I can get things done through the Queen.
Blue sighed. He could see these dragons had baked their opinions of one another in a furnace and were determined to stick to their factions. He slept poorly again that night, troubled by dreams of searching for Cricket through the dark halls of her school. No matter how many corners he turned or how many doors he opened, he never found the library. But he ran into Danaid and Fritillary and Pyarid over and over again, all of them yelling over his head at someone else across the room. Then, just before he woke up, he found a room with Luna's cocoon in it, but the threads were cut open, and no one was inside. He scrambled out of his nest before he was fully awake, stumbling over his claws as he hurried to her cocoon. It was still there, still safe, still warm. The silk walls seemed thinner than before, so he thought he could see the shadow of Luna on the other side. He leaned against it again and whispered, "Luna, I miss you." The silk moved against his scales, a slight push and give, as though the dragon inside was rolling over or nudging him back.
"She's coming out tonight," Blue said, grinning, when Admiral came over to check on him.
Even in this peculiar place, he couldn't help feeling excited for Luna. She'd finally have wings, like she always wanted. But would she ever get to really use them? His smile dimmed as the cocoon rocked again, even though this was the last place he wanted to be. He was glad he'd be here for Luna when she came out. He was glad he'd be the one to explain everything, instead of a bunch of squabbling strangers.
"Dad," Blue said, "what do you think will happen to me if I end up not being a flame silk?"
"You'll get one of the regular silkwing jobs down here," his father said breezily. "Moving cauldrons or chopping food or cleaning, that sort of thing."
"But what if I want to go home?" Blue asked, wishing he could stop his voice from trembling. "Would I really have to stay here?"
Admiral drummed his claws on the rocks below him.
"Well," he said, "the Queen doesn't exactly like to have silkwings wandering around who know where this cavern is."
Blue's shoulders slumped, and Admiral hurried on quickly.
"But tell you what, I'll write her a letter. Or lots of letters. If you're not a flame silk, I'll think of some very good reasons why you should get to go home. I'll convince her. Don't worry. It might take a while, but then maybe you'll decide you want to stay. It's quite nice here. And this is where I am," he finished, with a wistful note in his voice.
"I know," Blue said. "I'll think about it," he added, to make his dad feel better.
That day passed much like the one before. Blue prowled all the corners again, looking for loose stones or a breath of air from outside. He tried to avoid getting dragged into the fights between the flame silks, but it was almost impossible. Every time he walked across the cave, someone would call him over, and then someone else would start shouting about how he shouldn't associate with worm-eating lowlifes like that. And soon they'd all be arguing over an offensive remark one of them had made 10 years ago. And finally, Admiral would have to come hustle Blue away to safety. But he did find a spot, just one, that gave him a spark of hope. It was in the wall under the ledge where the hive wings guarded the staircase. Here the rock slanted back a ways into a craggy corner, and when Blue ran his talons over the stone, he found a hole. It wasn't a very big hole. It was just large enough for him to fit one of his arms through it, but when he did, he felt open space on the other side. Open space and a touch of chilliness, as though there was another big cave back there, or maybe even a passage. The rocks he could feel on the back of the wall seemed damp. He tried peering through, but he couldn't see anything but darkness. He returned to his nest, trying to think like Cricket. How would she get through the wall if she were stuck in here? It was early evening when Luna's cocoon started squirming. He crouched beside it, touching the silk gently with his talons whenever it seemed as if it might rock too far away. Their father was there too, watching with shining eyes. A crack appeared at one end of the golden cocoon. Blue held his breath as it widened, slicing off the tip. Claws appeared in the gap, pushing away the top of the cocoon, and then he could see Luna's head shoving her way out as well.
"Luna," he called. "I'm here. You're doing great. You're almost done."
She couldn't answer yet, but he saw her antennae unfurl and wave at him. Luna wriggled and heaved and slowly dragged her whole body out, until finally she left the empty husk of the cocoon behind her.
"Whoosh," she said, collapsing on her stomach on the warm rocks.
Her wings unfolded gracefully from her back and spread out to dry, like cascading petals of green sunlight. They were beautiful.
"You did it," Blue cheered.
He lay down beside her and nudged her snout with his.
"Your wings are amazing. So amazing, Luna."
His throat closed over everything else he wanted to say. She smiled sleepily at him.
"Then why are you crying, little brother?" she asked. "Overwhelmed by my gloriousness?"
"Pretty much," he said, with a sniffly laugh. "I missed you so much."
"Aw," she said, covering one of his talons with hers. "It was only 5 days, silly."
Yeah, but... they were really stressful days, he said.
She blinked at him for a long moment, and then her gaze slowly shifted to the cave walls behind him and the glow of the light from all the flame-silk cauldrons and the stranger watching them eagerly from extremely close by. She rolled her wrists in and stared at them, then sat up abruptly.
Hi, said Admiral. Oh, wow, I can't believe this is happening. I'm so happy to meet you.
Luna stared at him, then at Blue with an, explain this, face.
This is Admiral, Blue said. Our dad.
He felt a twinge of pain in his own wrists and glanced down. Uh-oh. Were those pinpricks of gold lava under his scales?
This is the greatest day of my life, Admiral declared, with a most enormous grin on his face.
Enough smiling. Time to spin, Sandfly said, stomping up and poking him in the shoulder.
I give them 3 days until they figure out that you're the most annoying dragon in here,
Fritillary shouted from across the cavern.
Luna glanced around frantically, her wings fluttering. She leaned forward and seized Blue's talons between hers.
Blue, she said, where are we?
Chapter 24.
So, Swordtail
might be nearby, Blue said, or might have been captured.
This is somehow too much information, and absolutely not enough information at the same time, Luna said, rubbing her forehead.
Tangerine?
Admiral offered. Thanks, she said, taking it and peeling it quickly. She'd been eating non-stop while Blue told her the whole story. Admiral, it turned out, had a stash of food tucked away in his nest, and he was surprisingly adept at tossing fruit while spinning flame silk at the same time.
But the Queen hasn't come down to yell at you or anything? Luna asked.
No, Blue said. I really thought she would, or that I'd get dragged into her throne room and punished. But this seems to be it. She just had me thrown in here.
Like a lost thing that she found and put back in its place, Luna said grumpily. I mean, I'm glad you weren't punished, Blue. But the Queen uses punishment mostly to send a message to the rest of her subjects. So I'm guessing she didn't want to draw attention to the fact that she has flame silks, or that a little wingless silkwing was able to hide from her for so long.
That was only because I met Cricket, Blue said. She's the one who figured out how to hide me.
Luna rolled her eyes at him affectionately. Trust you to find the one good hivewing in the entire tribe. Now I'll never be able to convince you that they're all evil.
Because they're not, he protested. There must be others as nice as Cricket. Maybe not as smart, or pretty, or funny, or kind. But probably a few that are nice.
Luna shook her head. I doubt it. But even if they are, they never get a chance to be, because of the Queen's brainwashing. She shuddered from antennae to tail. That mind control thing sounds so creepy.
It is, Blue said.
I hope Io's all right.
Me too. I hope she found the chrysalis. Luna, did you know about the chrysalis?
A little bit. Luna stood up, shaking out her wings and testing different positions she could hold them in. I knew Sortel and Io had just met them. I was hoping to join once I had my wings. I didn't quite figure on waking up in here. Blue winced, and she gave him a sharp look. Is your silk coming in? Does it feel hot? She took his talons and turned them over to study his wrists. It was hard to see if they were glowing, with all the light from the other flame silk in the cave.
I'm supposed to spin my cocoon tomorrow night, Blue said. I wish I didn't have to do it in here.
He'd been nervous enough about his metamorphosis when he knew it would happen in the tranquil, peaceful safety of the cocoon. But it was much more unnerving to imagine spinning his silk here,
in this too bright place, with its shouting dragons and stomping guards all staring at him. There must be a way out, Luna said. She looked up at the guards by the stairwell. How many guards do you think there are?
Luna, Blue said. There's no way we can fight them. Just you and me? That's crazy.
But now I can do this, she said. She held out one arm, and a flaming silk thread burst from her wrist. It hit one of Admiral's piles of letters and instantly set it ablaze.
Ack!
Admiral cried. He leaped over and knocked the burning pile away from the others, then stamped it out with his talons. When it was a pile of ashes on the rocks, he picked up the fiery strand of silk and brandished it at Luna.
This is not a toy. Look what you did. Now how will I remember what I've already written? The Queen doesn't like repetition. This is terrible. You need to learn to be careful with your flame silk, young lady.
Sorry, Luna said innocently. Blue blinked at Admiral.
Dad, you're holding the flame silk in your talons. Why isn't it burning you?
Admiral climbed back into his nest and dropped Luna's flame silk into his own cauldron. It glowed a much brighter orange gold than what was already in there.
Flame silk dragons can't be burned by flame silk, he said. That would be absurd.
Wow, Blue said.
Wait, so if some already burned me... No, it will still burn you until you've gone through metamorphosis, whether you're going to be a flame silk or not,
Admiral said.
Luna, come here and let me show you the different kinds you can make. Flame silk is a big responsibility.
Luna rolled her eyes at Blue, but she went over to their father and gave him her full attention. Blue sighed, rubbing his wrists. His wing buds were tingling, too, in a way that was both exciting and uncomfortable. He wished he could go run through the savannah, under the stars, just breathing air that wasn't thick and hot and overly stuffed with oranges. He scrambled down to the central floor of the cavern and made his way to the spot under the staircase ledge where he'd found the hole earlier that day. He guessed it was close to the middle of the night. Only two guards were on the stairs, and the regular silkwing workers were gone, to a cramped apartment home in one of the warehouses, according to Admiral. Most of the flame silks were asleep. Danaid, Admiral, and Fritillary were the only ones awake, pouring silk into their cauldrons. Blue could feel Danaid's eyes on him as he poked through the rocks. He was out of sight of the staircase guards here, but the ones up above the glass could still see him. He glanced up to confirm this, and the glow of at least six pairs of eyes stared back. So even if he could chisel through the wall, he'd never get a chance to. There was no way to do anything surreptitious in here. He found the hole again and slipped his claws through, reaching for that feeling of freedom. The dark open space on the other side that might lead anywhere. To the outside world. To the sky and all its stars. On the other side of the wall, unseen, something slipped gently between his claws and squeezed. Blue came this close to screaming his head off. But at the same moment, he heard someone whisper, "Shh." He bit down hard on his tongue and froze. "Blue," the voice whispered. He tilted his head closer to the wall.
"Cricket?"
"Shh." "Yes, it's me."
"And me,"
someone else whispered fiercely.
"Is Luna all right?"
whispered a third voice. "Swordtail."
"She's amazing," Blue said softly. "I can't believe you're all..."
"Blue? Don't talk," Cricket interrupted. "They're watching you very closely.
It's suspicious enough that you're over here with your arm in a hole. If you keep talking to the wall, someone's going to investigate." She squeezed his claws again and let go. Reluctantly, he pulled his talon back, although it felt emptier than ever now, as though it had found its missing half, and now it had to be alone again. He wanted to reach for her once more,
to be sure she was real and really there and really alive. But he could see how that might look a bit strange. Danaid was pretending to look at her wrists, but she was leaning so far toward him that she was in danger of toppling out of her nest. The eyes up above stared and stared. He wasn't sure they ever blinked. Was that a hive-wing power some guards had? No need for eyelids? He sat down and started building a small pyramid of pebbles, trying to look harmless. That was something he was usually pretty good at.
The leaf wings were trying to build a tunnel, Cricket said softly, to get into the hive from below. That's how they found this place, by accident, as they were digging underneath. Did you find your father? Sorry, I know you can't answer. But Luna came out of her cocoon? Are there a lot of flame silks down here? Oh, you can't answer that either. I can't believe how big this cave is.
Not big enough, if you're trapped in it for your entire life, Blue thought.
He thought he should be more horrified by the idea of leaf wings tunneling into the hives. 6 days ago, the image of leaf wings suddenly bursting out of the ground inside his city would have been the most terrifying thing he could possibly imagine. But he'd met a few other more terrifying things since then.
Listen, Sundew hissed. Cricket wants to get you out of there.
I do too,
Swordtail chimed in. Right, but I don't care what he thinks, Sundew clarified. Cricket nearly died with me, though, so I kind of feel like I owe you guys one. My parents have more important things to do, but I might be able to come up with a plan. Can you be ready tomorrow night?
Blue's heart sank.
He shook his head and shifted himself around the rock pyramid, pretending to reach for another stone, but really angling so whoever was peering through the hole could see his wing buds. He heard Cricket let out a soft gasp.
He's about to go into metamorphosis, she whispered to Sundew. We have to get him out now, tonight.
Oh, rotten bark beetles, Sundew grumbled. Fine, I'll do it the messy way. Blue, can you see a crack in the wall, near the bottom, that arches around in a half circle? Blue glanced casually at the wall. He spotted what she meant immediately. It looked like a sun setting.
Can you and Luna fit through there, if I can knock out the chunk of rock underneath the crack?
He thought so, although he hadn't spent enough time with Luna's wings yet to be sure how big they were. He was a little more worried about how to fit Admiral through, but his father was quite skinny. He'd just have to squish. Blue gave a very slight nod, scattering his pebbles as though he'd gotten frustrated with his construction.
Great. Go get her. And everyone be ready to run. Good luck, Blue, Cricket whispered.
Tell Luna I'm here, Swordtail interjected, very heroically.
You sat around in a greenhouse and then followed me into a tunnel, Sundew observed. I'm not sure you qualify for a statue in your honor just yet.
Shh,
Cricket scolded both of them. Blue picked up a pebble and pretended to peer at it closely, then set it down and headed back over to Luna.
Everything all right?
Danaid asked as he went by. She leaned her elbows on the edge of her nest, watching him with wide-eyed interest.
Oh, yes, Blue said. Just some pretty rocks I think my sister would like.
You will introduce her to me, won't you? Danaid said, and her voice was an odd mixture of pushy and wistful.
No matter what your dad says.
Of course, Blue said, feeling guilty. He couldn't stay here just to keep these lonely flame silks company, but he was sorry that escaping with Luna meant abandoning them to their endless quarrels.
Is there any way to bring them along? Could they come with us?
He didn't know how to alert the other flame silks without attracting the attention of the guards, and given what he knew about them so far, he was afraid even the idea of an escape plan would somehow trigger a screaming match that would give everything away. He hurried back to Luna, worrying over the problem in his head. Rescuing her was everything. It was the whole reason he'd broken so many rules and gotten in so much trouble. It was the most important thing, getting her out of here.
but he wished there was a way to rescue all of them. Luna sat up as he approached, and her eyes gleamed when she saw the expression on his face. She'd always been able to read him, ever since they first hatched.
"You've found a way out," she whispered excitedly.
"Our friends are here," he whispered back.
"Then let's go."
She jumped to her feet and looked up at Admiral.
"Hmm?" he said, blinking down at them. "I was just composing another letter in my head. To thank the Queen for bringing you here, of course. My letters can't all be complaints, you know. Oh, no, that wouldn't do. I must also show my gratitude when she is so generous with us. My thank you letter in regards to the tangerines was a work of art."
He shot a regretful look at the pile of ashes, as though wondering how many more masterpieces had been lost to Luna's flame silk.
"Father," Blue said softly, "we have a way out of here, but we have to go right now."
"Go?" Admiral echoed. "What do you mean?"
"We're going to escape," Luna said. "All three of us. Come on, quick, while the guards are looking sleepy."
"But I'm in the middle of my spinning rotation," Admiral said, "and I haven't made nearly enough for the quota. You're going to have to make it up with all your bright, lovely silk. They'll probably give you a turn in the morning, once you've rested a bit."
"No," Luna said firmly. "I'm not giving anyone my bright, lovely silk. It's mine, and I'm escaping with Blue right now."
Admiral twitched, as though the word escape was finally crawling into his ears.
"No, no," he said. "The hives need our silk. We're providing a great service. We're very important. You're very important. You can't leave." "What are you even talking about? We're not allowed to leave. That rule is pretty clear."
"Come with us, please," Blue begged. "This is no way to live, Father. We could be together and free. Out there."
"Out where?" Admiral scoffed. "There's nowhere the Queen doesn't control." "No, no. We mustn't anger her with ungrateful stunts like escape attempts. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. You'll get us all in trouble. It'll make everything worse."
"How could it be worse than this?" Luna asked.
"In the beginning, there were chains," Admiral said. "On our ankles. I was the one who got rid of those. It only took me about 4 years and 200 or so letters, but I finally convinced her we could be trusted without them. And now you want to break that trust?"
"This is not a mutual relationship," Luna said. "The Queen is using you. She's giving you next to nothing, and you're letting her walk all over you instead of fighting back. We're not going to be a part of that." She turned to Blue. "I don't think this is going to work. We have to go without him."
"Oh, no," Admiral cried. "You can't. You'll undo all the progress I've made with the Queen. We have rules for a reason, you know, and she'll be so disappointed."
"So escape with us."
Blue couldn't give up. He couldn't just leave his father here.
"Father, you don't have to follow rules that are unjust, and you don't have to do everything the Queen says. Don't you feel like there are rules in your heart that are more important? About helping other dragons, and standing up for anyone who's being treated badly, and loving whoever you want, and choosing to live your life in your own kind, peaceful way?"
He glanced over and saw Luna staring at him in surprise. She reached out with one wing and pulled him into a hug.
"Wow," she said. "It really was a long 5 days, wasn't it?"
"Well, I just understood it, finally," he said, "that there are dragons who aren't safe, and dragons I could help. And being a good little silkwing who follows the rules was making my life easy, but also helping to keep a bad system in place. I didn't know before how bad it was for so many dragons. Like you, Father. Like all the flame silks in here. This isn't right."
"And you shouldn't want it for your children," Luna said. "If you want to stay, that's fine. But we're going." She turned Blue toward the center of the cave.
No, Admiral said. No, no, it's wrong. I can't let you do this. Guards!
Blue inhaled sharply. The hive wings by the staircase whipped their heads toward them. His father was sabotaging their escape, turning them in to keep them trapped here. They had to run, but their escape route looked a whole continent away, and it wasn't even open yet.
Guards! Admiral bellowed. Listen!
Stop annoying the guards! Thanaid shouted at Admiral, interrupting him. They don't want to hear your thoughts on potassium at this hour, or ever.
It's not that, Admiral yelled back. Although my thoughts on potassium are very well researched and relevant. But hey, guards, guards, my dragonettes! Your brains are a pile of bananas.
Fritillary hollered from his perch, never one to miss out on a fight.
Your dragonettes are boring.
They are not!
Thanaid and Admiral roared in unison.
I think they're charming,
Thanaid yelled.
You don't even know them, Admiral shouted. They're my dragonettes, and they're fascinating, but they're...
Well then, they're the opposite of you, Thanaid bellowed.
What is happening? Luna said to Blue, covering her ears. There was something about the sparkle in Danaid's eyes. Blue wasn't sure if it was her usual spirited fury, or if maybe...
I think Danaid might be trying to help us, he said quietly.
He glanced up at the guards. They were sitting down again, rolling their eyes at one another as though they'd heard fights like this a million times.
Follow me. Walk. Don't run. Act casual.
He climbed down through the stalagmites, trying to quiet his thudding heart.
Guards!
Admiral yelled again. But as Blue had hoped, Admiral didn't jump up and chase them. He would have to stop his silk spinning to do so, and that was yet another rule he'd never break.
Shut up!
Pyriad whined, sitting up and rubbing his eyes.
Why are you making so much noise? It's the middle of the night.
Yeah, some of us were sleeping,
Whitespeck shouted.
You're not helping matters with your bellowing,
Heliconian chimed in from the nest closest to him. Now all 10 of them were awake and shouting. It was perfect cover. The hive wing guards looked like the last thing they wanted to do was come down and get involved in this. And no matter how much Admiral roared, they couldn't hear his accusations over the noise of everyone else. Blue paused at Danaid's nest.
Thank you, he said, holding one talon up to her.
She took it and squeezed it with a wink.
Whatever I'm doing, it's great fun.
This is Luna, he said. Luna, this is Danaid, who is definitely a dragon worth knowing.
Danaid beamed over the edge of her nest at Luna.
Nice to meet you, she said. Now scoot, I can see something exciting is about to happen.
She nodded over at the wall, and Blue realized that the crack looked wider than before, and something seemed to be coming through it.
You could come with us, he said.
I'm not sure my old heart could stand running for my life, she said. But if you find a more sedate way to get us out of here, come back for me.
He nodded.
I will try. I promise.
She went back to shouting at the other flame silks as he and Luna moved away. It was funny to think of Danaid wanting anything sedate when she seemed so delighted in the middle of chaos. The stone gave a low crack as they crouched beside it, and Blue realized that it was being pushed out of the wall. By... were those roots? He gingerly touched one of the thick brown fingers that were shoving their way through the crack. It felt like branches, woody and knobbly under his claws. Sundew was growing something. Somehow, faster than anything should be able to grow, and it was shoving the rocks apart, breaking through the crack, creating an opening. He dug his talons in around the boulder and yanked. Luna did the same, and with a lot of grunting and muscle pulling, they felt it slowly give way until it tumbled out at their feet. The hole in the wall yawned at them, and on the other side, beyond the roots, he saw three faces crowding in to peer through. Swordtail reached toward Luna.
"You're safe," he whispered.
"And I have wings," she answered giddily.
She shoved Blue in front of her.
"Go on, quick."
Suddenly there was a furious pounding overhead. Smash, smash, smash against the glass. They'd been spotted. That meant the guards were coming. All the guards. Blue dove into the hole and wiggled through into the dark, navigating a small thicket of leafy branches. He felt the warmth of Cricket's talons lifting him up and saw light glinting off her glasses.
"I'm so glad you're alive," he said breathlessly. "I had a feeling you'd rescue me. Except, I thought maybe I had to come rescue you, but I didn't know how."
"You did rescue me. Just by being you," she said.
"Oh gosh, that wasn't corny at all." Luna popped through and Swordtail swept his wings around her.
"My love," he cried.
"By the forest, all of you stop being sickening and run," Sundew cried.
She took off in a whirl of green scales, disappearing rapidly into the dark. Luna produced a small wisp of flame that lit up the tunnel just enough for them to see, and they ran. But before she did, for that moment in the dark, Blue had glanced down at his wrists and saw tiny globes of fire under his scales. Chapter 25. They ran and climbed and ducked and slid down loose pebbly dirt slopes, following the flicker of Luna's silk and the flash of Sundew's tail up ahead. Their escape route smelled like earthworms and cut grass. Twice they had to squeeze through gaps so narrow, Blue was worried Swordtail wouldn't fit. Most of the time the ceiling was low enough to scrape their heads, and sometimes the dirt turned to damp mud, clogging up their talons. But after a while, they slowed down to listen, and they couldn't hear anyone behind them.
"Maybe they couldn't get through the hole from the cavern," Blue said.
Maybe Sundew's fast-growing roots had blocked the way.
"Or they got stuck at the bottleneck gaps," Swordtail said, rubbing his shoulder.
"They'll be out searching for the other end of the tunnel," Sundew said. "Good thing it's quite a long way from the hive." She turned to keep going and they followed, moving at a steadier pace now. Soon the dirt tunnel shifted up and released them into a stone cave, similar in size to the flame silk cavern, but cold and dark and empty. From there on, they climbed through natural passages in the rocks. At one point, they hopped up the side of a trickling waterfall that sprayed their scales with mist. Blue thought he heard a river rushing somewhere close by. He also heard odd, whispering, chittering sounds inside the echoes, as though the caves were haunted by musical squirrels.
Or reading monkeys, he realized.
These caves could be connected to the ones where he and Cricket had seen the little monkey creature. Maybe there were lots of them living down here, like Cricket's science project dream come true. And then, a long while later, he heard a sound like distant roaring.
"What's that?" he whispered to Cricket.
"I'm not sure," she answered. "The smell is different too. Did you notice? Doesn't it smell like salt and fish, maybe? Oh, I know what it is. Sundew, are we going to the ocean?"
Just then they rounded a corner of the tunnel, and there it was. The ocean. They were standing in an enormous cave that looked out onto the beach. It was early morning. Rivulets of water ran and branched and reconvened all through the sandy floor of the cave. Seabirds dove and wheeled in and out, visiting their nests near the rocky ceiling. Cricket ran forward, her talons splashing in the wet sand, to the mouth of the cave. She opened her wings to the wind, so they billowed out like pages flung into the sky. The waves roared cheerfully at her.
"Oh, wow," Luna said, waiting up beside her.
She spread her wings, too, and they sat side by side for a moment, gold, orange, black, and pale green, hive wing and silk wing, gazing out at the sea. Blue sidled up beside them and looked out at the beach. It stretched away beyond sight in each direction, with tall cliffs overlooking the beach as far as he could see. Up at the top of the cliffs, long grass tossed and waved in the wind. The ocean was so big. He'd never quite imagined how big it could be, or how noisy, or how active. It never stopped moving, charging up the beach, sprinting away, rolling and turning blue, green, gray, with sprays of white. "Have you ever been here before?" Cricket asked him. "I haven't, but I've always wanted to visit the sea. Doesn't it feel like a promise? Like the night before an exciting journey?" "The distant kingdoms are out there, Blue. I know it." She squinted at the tossing waves, as though she might be able to glimpse the far-off continent on the other side of the world. "Clear sight's home. We could learn so much if we could just figure out how to get there." Luna gave a rueful laugh. "I'm afraid we have enough to deal with on this continent," she said. "I'm all for exploring new worlds, but I think we have to save this one first."
"Or we could just leave," Cricket said, in a quieter voice. "If it's too dangerous here, maybe we'd be safer over there."
"Yes, we might be," Luna said. "But the dragons we left behind would still be in danger." She turned as Swordtail and Sundew came up to join them. Blue realized it was raining. A quiet drizzle plip-plopped across the sand, turning the air misty in the pale dawn light. He held out his burning wrists so the raindrops could cool them down.
"Thank you for getting us out of there," he said to Sundew. "Where are your parents?"
"Sulking," she said. "They didn't want me to reveal the existence of the tunnel to the hive wings, even though we'd already decided we can't use it. Also, they're mad that I haven't given them this yet." She tapped one of her larger pouches, and it made a thunking sound. "But they're not the boss of me, and I told them they could have it once you were free. I'll meet up with them tonight."
"And then what will you do?"
Swordtail asked. "Go back to the other leaf wings," she said. "Figure out our next plan. Since this one didn't go exactly the way we expected."
"Is that?" Luna started, pointing to the pouch. "Do you really have..."
Sundew reached in and drew out the Book of Clearsight. It looked even smaller and less mystical in the daylight. It just looked like a very old book that someone had sewn together, a little crookedly.
"But it holds the secrets of our future," Blue thought, with a shiver of awe. "And we could read it. We could read it right now, and know everything that's going to happen."
"Can I show them?"
Cricket asked Sundew. The leafwing nodded, passing the book to her. Cricket found a flat, dry boulder and swept off all the sand on it with her tail. Blue sat down beside her, and Cricket scooted closer to him so Luna could sit on her other side.
"It's not what we thought it was," Cricket said. "It's, well, it's something else completely."
She opens the book to the first page.
"Dear grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren, and all the many great-grandchildren to come. How funny it feels to know you so well, when there are so many of you I'm never going to meet. I see you all the time, especially when I'm just on the edge of falling asleep. The future is so clear, suddenly, now that I won't be able to change anything. My time is almost up, and yours is just beginning. I won't be able to control anything after this. I won't be able to use my visions to protect you, to keep you all safe. But then, one thing I've learned over my long, strange, lovely life is that I never could actually control the future as much as I thought I could. I should have learned that lesson with my first love, back home in Pyria.
but I kept trying anyway. And I did manage to keep you all alive. I battled the future for that much, and I won. But the future will always win in the end, because it continues on forever, to where I cannot go. So this is my last battle. The last thing I can do to try and keep my claws on the balance of the future, to keep you safe as long as I can. In this book are my visions of what is yet to come. Some of it seems small, but I've included everything, even if I can't tell yet why it's important. I leave you this, and hope that it will make life better for both our tribes. I hope you will use it to protect the dragons around you, especially the ones who are the most threatened, regardless of who they are and how you think you feel about them. There are some hard times ahead, as there always are, everywhere, and for everyone. I'm sorry I won't be here to help you rebuild after the earthquake. I hope I've written down enough advice to get you through the famine. But most of what I see is joy. Your futures are full of joy. What a miracle it is to be a dragon, alive right now, and part of this wonderful world. Do you ever stop to think about that? About what an odd and lucky thing it is to be this soul inside this body, to live in a world with so many marvels in it. I am so grateful to have known and loved you all. All the hurricanes and earthquakes and fires and storms cannot break you, if you remember a few things. We are here to love with our whole hearts. Lean into your kindness and empathy in the face of evil, but do not let evil win. You are the only dragon who can decide who you want to be. Don't let yourself get stuck on someone else's path. Search for what's true, and think for yourself. Over 100 years ago, I thought my life was finished, and there was nothing left to live for. I was so, so wrong. Keep going. The list of things to live for is limitless, and it is possible to be happy again. And, this one is going to sound ridiculous coming from me, don't worry about the future so much, or else you might miss out on the extraordinary present. Be happy, dragons of the future. You can change the world with your joy and your hope. All my love, Clear Sight. Blue glanced up and saw Luna wiping away tears.
This is exactly how I imagined Clear Sight, he said.
Of course you did, Luna said, with a catch in her voice. You have faith in other dragons, whereas I thought she was a conniving manipulator who deliberately set up her descendants to be the most powerful tribe in Pantala. She shook her head.
Yup. Me too, said Sundu.
Oh no, Blue said, shocked. She wasn't. She wouldn't.
I see that, Luna said, waving her talon at the book. But at some point, that's what her descendants decided to do. Why didn't she see that coming and stop them?
Because, Cricket said softly, it turns out she wasn't all-knowing and all-seeing after all. She started turning pages, pointing to the dates up at the top. After about 200 years, the flow of visions slowed dramatically. A hurricane here, a tsunami 90 years later, a few more tiny notes, full of question marks. And then, on a date marked about 900 years after the first, she'd written, "Take care of the trees. I think they might be in danger, but I can't see why. Help the leaf wings protect them. I love you. Good luck."
Cricket turned the page. The next spread was blank, and so was the next, and the next. The last few pages of the book were empty. The last vision from Clear Sight was dated over 1,000 years ago. Chapter 26. Blue looked up at Cricket and Luna,
blinking in confusion.
"Where's the rest of it?" he asked. "What about the tree wars, and us trying to steal the book, and everything Queen Wasp knows?"
"She doesn't know anything," Luna said furiously. "She was faking it the whole time. The power of the book, everything that makes the Hive Wing so superior, it's all lies."
"In case you're curious," Sundu interjected, "this is my not-at-all-surprised face."
Cricket was nodding. Clearsight never saw this far ahead. She had no idea her book would be used this way.
But
Blue still couldn't wrap his head around it.
"But Queen Wasp said Clearsight wanted the tribes to unite under her rule. That was the whole reason Queen Monarch gave up her throne. Because if it was in the Book of Clearsight, it had to be important."
"It was a lie, Blue!" Luna jumped up, and Swordtail came over to stand beside her. "Wasp lied and used the book to seize power."
"And to drive out the Leaf Wings," Sundu said. "Queen Sequoia wouldn't agree to step down without seeing the book first, which, of course, Wasp wouldn't allow. Our queen said if she'd seen it in Clearsight's own handwriting, she might have considered it, which I think is insane in the first place. We don't need anyone else to be our queen."
"How could she?"
Blue said, closing the book and resting his claws on it.
"I don't understand. How could Queen Wasp read this and then decide to become the total opposite of what Clearsight says to be?"
Cricket put her talon over his on the book. "Some dragons care infinitely more about themselves than anyone else," she said. "Which I think is hard for a dragon like you to imagine."
"Well," he said, "I'm very angry about this."
"Angry enough to do something about it?" Sundu asked. She lifted her chin challengingly.
"Like what?"
Swordtail asked. "We're going to take down the Hive Wings," Sundu said. "We could use some dragons on the inside."
Swordtail snorted. "You may not have noticed, but we're not exactly on the inside anymore."
"We know dragons who are, though," Luna said, giving him a significant look.
"Wait, what does take down the Hive Wings mean?" Blue asked. "Are you going to hurt them?"
Sundu scowled at him. "That is sort of the point of a revolution," she snapped. She snatched the book away from him and stuffed it back in her pouch. "I thought you said you were mad."
"Yes, but no," Blue said. "The Hive Wings have also been lied to, and brainwashed, and tricked. The queen is the problem. You have to fight her, not the whole tribe. I mean, we do. We have to stop her."
His wrists flared with pain, as though they were trying to remind him that he had slightly more urgent things to do first, such as, for instance, growing wings.
"Let's rest for a while," Cricket said, watching him with concern. "Everyone thinks better after sleeping."
She hopped down to a dry patch of soft sand in a sheltered corner of the cave and dug a small hollow. "Blue?" He gratefully slid down and sank into the hollow next to her. His wing buds were really starting to ache, and his head felt strangely fuzzy, too. He sort of wished he could spin his cocoon now and shut out the whole mess and all the decisions they might have to make. But the thought also terrified him. He didn't want to be cut off from Cricket and Luna for 5 days, with no way to know what was going on. And what if something went wrong with his metamorphosis?
What could go more wrong than turning out to be a flame silk? He thought.
"Well, I don't need to sleep," Luna said. "I'm going to test out my new wings. Want to come?" she said, bumping Swordtail's side.
"Obviously, yes," he said.
"Be careful," Sundu warned. "The Hive Wings will be out in force looking for us. It would be safer to stay inside until dark."
"Just a little flight?" Luna wheedled. "I finally have wings, and we're so far from the hives.
I promise we'll be careful.
Sundu shrugged. You're not my tribe, she said. But if you get caught,